A few days ago, I received a call from a reporter who was doing a story in which she was calling a bunch of rabbis and asking them, what would you say on your last sermon? It won't surprise you that my first reaction was a joke. I said, my last sermon, I would probably complain about my pension plan. But she said, no, really, what would you say? And then I said, you know, the truth is that on my last sermon, I would probably give a sermon very much like my other sermons, because I wouldn't trust a rabbi who would only tell the congregation his truth when he was on his last sermon. So either you say what you believe is important, or you don't. But if you do, then your last sermon is just going to reiterate those themes. And that's normally what you do. And last night, for example, was a fun sermon. You should have been there. It was full of jokes and about dreams and community, and we had a great time, but not this morning. Because this morning I'm going to give a sermon that really I believe every rabbi in America should be giving right now, though I don't know how many are. And at this exact moment, if someone said, this is your last sermon, this is still the sermon that I would give. In the last century, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik asked why it is that people come to synagogue. He says, after all, you can ask God for things anywhere. He said, the reason you come to synagogue is to find out what God is asking of you. And this year, I think God is asking something of us. And this year, more than any other year, other than perhaps the Yom Kippur War in my memory, this is the year we have to answer. The French philosopher Alan Finkielkraut said in the 20th century, there were two things that happened that we knew must never recur. One is represented by Auschwitz, that is the attempted destruction of an entire people. And the other is represented by Hiroshima, that is the deployment of the ultimate weapon. And yet, astonishingly, and horrifyingly enough, at this very moment, the world faces the possibility that those two will be combined. And that will happen if Iran gets a nuclear bomb. You face simultaneously Auschwitz and Hiroshima. And if you think I'm an alarmist, I remind you that not only did the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, describe Israel as a cancer and an insult to humanity and call for its disappearance, but people who claim that he doesn't actually wield that much power forget that the chief of staff of the Iranian armed forces, I want to repeat that title to you, think of its American equivalent. The chief of staff of the Iranian armed forces said the Iranian nation is standing for its cause, and that's the full annihilation of Israel. In June, the vice president, Mohammad Reza Rahimi, told a United Nations anti-drug conference, a United Nations conference no less, that the Jews were responsible for the spread of illegal drugs around the world, that the Zionists control the international drug trade, and that we had ordered doctors to kill black babies. And in some ways, worst of all, the so-called supreme leader, Khamenei, has a website that is very closely associated with his teachings and his name, and on that website you can read an extensive Islamic judicial rationale for wiping out the state of Israel. You may or may not know that Canada has just cut off diplomatic relations with Iran. Canada. And I read in the Globe and Mail, a journalist wrote as follows about her country cutting off diplomatic relations. She said, okay, so maybe they're kidding. The Iranians, that is. Maybe they are 99% rational. But that other 1% is a bit worrisome, especially if they get moose. Honestly, we stand on a precipice. And there are a few things to keep in mind. I remember each year, I used to train counselors at Camp Ramah, and we would go through the same drill. As they would first come in, I would say to them, what is your most important job as a counselor? And you would get some beautiful, eloquent answers to teach the children the beauty of Judaism, or to teach them how to get along with one another, to have them make new friends. And when they were done with all their answers, I would say to them, you're all wrong. The most important job you have as a counselor is to make sure that that child returns home in one piece. That's your most important. Everything else is second to that. The most important job as a nation is to make sure that your citizens are safe. Nothing else comes close to that. Nothing else. And Israel right now can't say that with confidence. We are told as a people that we're obsessed with the Holocaust, but I ask you, what can it possibly mean to be too concerned about the fact that a half century ago, a third of your people were killed, and the only reason they weren't all killed was because you won the World War? How can you think about that too much? Especially when those enemies have not disappeared from the earth. This is what everyone should be talking about. There is nothing more important. Second, Israel is about survival, but it is not only about survival. And you and I both know that anybody who says the reason X hates Y is about to commit a simplification. There are lots of reasons why people hate. And everybody who gives you simple answers to complex questions, you should distrust them. But surely one of the reasons is because Israel, for all of its failings, has succeeded. Because it is a democracy. Because it does have economic success. Because it does have free elections, and fair elections, and real elections. That's one of the reasons why this hatred exists. And one of the reasons why you can take such a ridiculous pretext for violence like that YouTube video and make it a recruiting tool throughout the Arab world. Because the resentment is already there, and all you need is a flag to wave, and it bursts into flames. And third, I ask you, as a people, what is our gift? I just read a book that is going to be forthcoming in the next couple of months. I got a draft for review called Jews and Words by Amos Oz and his daughter, Fania Oz Sulzberger. They wrote it together. His daughter's a historian, and of course, he's one of Israel's greatest writers. And in the course of it, he said, Jews need only two things to survive. They're the only two things Jews have ever needed to survive, and without them, we can't survive. Children and words. As we traveled around the world, he said, we were a verbal tradition. You didn't have a synagogue. You didn't have a full community. That's okay, as long as you had a word, as long as you had a book, as long as you had a text, and you had a child. Our gift is that we are a vocal people. We make noise in this world. And if you have not made noise about this, if you have not spoken about it, if you have kept quiet, then you have a role to play. The day after tomorrow, you can read essentially this sermon online at time.com, at the internet site for Time magazine. And I wrote it for them because I thought this is what Jews have to be talking about, especially now. We have to use whatever influence we have, whatever channels we have, whatever words we have. Look, you remember, many of you, the Iran-Iraq war. You know who we're dealing with. Do you remember what happened during that war, that they would give children tokens to get into heaven if they martyred themselves during the war? Little children found dead with a token to get them into heaven. Those are the people whose rationality we are supposed to trust. And I am warning you, and I hope you will listen to me, the world, and by this I'm talking about the Western world, the civilized world, is becoming accustomed to the idea that Iran will get a bomb. Last week in the New York Times, and I don't care if you like the New York Times or you hate the New York Times, it's the most influential newspaper in the world. In the world. And the editor, Bill Keller, wrote a big editorial in the center of the opinion page, talking about how, in part, maybe we were too quick to assume that it couldn't be contained the way the Soviet Union was contained. On Morning Joe, a show, by the way, that I recommend to you if you ever want to watch morning television, although it's on from 3 to 6, that I appeared on and that I think is great, and they had Joe Klein on, who is often a very good reporter, and he talked about the fact that we could contain an Iranian bomb because, and I quote, they're not crazy. And yet, Roya Hakakian, whom we are bringing in a joint cooperation program with the Arm & Hammer Museum down the street. I was looking at her book, and on the back of her book is an endorsement from Joe Klein, that same Joe Klein. You want to know what he said before he decided that they weren't crazy? She has made plain, that is Roya Hakakian, the lethal immorality at the heart of the Iranian regime. Well, you can't have it both ways. And if it's your home that is in the path of the bomb, bet on crazy. Let's say they don't. Let's say they really don't decide they want to blow up the state that they've said over and over again they want to blow up. You don't think that Hezbollah is going to get hold of a bomb? No, we are told. The Iranians would never give it to them. But we know from what happened in Pakistan, all it takes is one brilliant, unscrupulous scientist to pass knowledge and material on. That's all it takes. And here's the most important fact. What happens can never unhappen. Once Iran gets a bomb, the world will never be the same. Remember that it was the Israelis who took out that nuclear reactor. What do you think the world would be like if they hadn't? At the time, the Americans didn't want them to. Now, I have no idea, and I'm not going to begin to tell you that a military strike is a good idea or a bad idea, or sanctions can work or can't work. I'm not a political expert. I am just telling you that from the perspective of Jewish history, there is no possibility that the enemies of the Jews could be given a weapon of such potency, and that any Jew can sleep well at night. Today is Rosh Hashanah. Do you know what we say on this day? Hayom Harat Olam. Today, the world was born. Do you remember the line that went through Robert Oppenheimer's mind as he saw the first atomic blast? It was from the Bhagavad Gita. I am become death, destroyer of worlds. While we're celebrating the birth of the world, there are other people who are relentlessly and assiduously trying to find the means to destroy worlds. And we don't have the luxury of a shameful obliviousness or indifference. It's not the sermon that any rabbi wants to give. But better this year than next year. I'm not a one-issue voter, and I assume you're not either. There are all sorts of things that concern me and concern you about the world, but this year, boy, this year, if there was a candidate, and I will let you decide if there is or there isn't, but if there was a candidate who had a plausible scheme for preventing Iran from getting a nuclear bomb, that candidate would get my vote and should get yours. This is what matters. I said in that essay on time, look, this won't get anyone a job and it won't bring manufacturing back from China. But if someone knew how to do it, and I don't know that anyone does or not, but if someone knew how to do it, it might prevent annihilation. That direct. That sincere. Abba Iban, the great Israeli diplomat, said that there are things in Jewish history too terrible to imagine, but nothing too terrible that it hasn't happened. This is too terrible to imagine, but that doesn't mean that it cannot happen. So I beg of you, don't forget this. Don't ignore it. And don't keep quiet about it. Earlier, those of you who heard Rick Richmond's beautiful Israel Bonds appeal said, you know, every time you talk about Israel, you can always say Israel at the crossroads. But this is different. It's different. This isn't a small threat. This is everything. And even if it starts with Israel, as we know from history, it never ends there. The enemies of the Jews become the enemies of the world. That is an iron law of history. So don't think that this will go away. It is not only our task, but it is surely our task. I leave you with two words. Never again.